It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Issues, people, issues. Now that the primaries are done, can we talk issues, please? Item number one, the economy, from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday, the 9th day of June. Good to have you with us as always, everybody. It's been over for a couple of days now, longer than that, really. But we put what I guess you'd call a full stop on the 2016 primaries today. Bernie Sanders met with President Obama at the White House. Not long after that, the president formally endorsed Hillary Clinton. The conventions and the general election will soon be upon us. And this year, as always, the economy tops the list of things that voters say is their biggest concern. Good thing, then, that we're doing a series this election cycle with Frontline and PBS NewsHour taking a long, hard look at the economics of the 2016 election. Things like wage stagnation and income inequality, the cost of higher education and outsourcing, and today, the middle class. We're calling it How the Deck is Stacked, and it begins with me a couple of weeks ago out talking to a guy by the name of Aaron Murray.
You cannot lose my school keys.
You need your keys. Don't forget the charger.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I'm telling you.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was having a lousy day.
Today, I went out to get my laptop, and I was like, my car tires are low. And I'm like, actually, my car tires look like they're not connected to my car anymore.
We were standing on the side of the road in front of his apartment, grabbing stuff out of his car before the tow truck came and hauled it away.
I don't think I need anything else.
He parked down the street last night like he always does, but the scene this morning was a grim one. A dented fender, two crushed wheels, a broken axle.
Thankfully, he left a note.
He left a note, right?
He left a note.
The driver, it turns out, swerved to avoid hitting a cat.
Yeah, so his insurance is going to pay. And
yeah, but...
But we don't know if they're going to pay you enough to get a whole new car, right?
I don't have the money to cover this, so the insurance has to cover it. They say they will. They say they're going to cover everything, but covering everything is never everything.
That's a good line. That's a good line. So listen, how big of a pain is this?
I mean, this is 2014. I'm still paying for this car. I'm still paying for this car. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do. You know, we were just talking. Do we get a new car? You know, how do we find the money to get the down payment? And I don't think I'm going to get as favorable of a interest rate on it as I got on this one, because my credit's gone downhill since then.
So what's that going to do to your monthly budget?
I mean, this month is shot. Right. Like, this month is shot. Next month is shot.
Right.
I'm a teacher. I don't get paid over the summer. Oh. So I was already budgeting for July and August, saying I don't get a paycheck in July and August.
Right.
I was looking to pick up some other job in that time. Now, not only that, but I have to cover this.
And you can't get to whatever other job you're in.
Yeah, I can't get it to whatever job it is.
As you try to get ahead, this is like two steps back. Maybe more.
Definitely more.
Man.
The next morning, it's a Monday. Aaron's wife, Mary, heads into work. She's a science teacher with the Los Angeles Unified School District, LAUSD. And today, a lesson on climate change for 27 sixth graders until her phone rings right in the middle of class.
Can you guys hold on just for 1 second? Because Aaron is calling me. Sorry. Hey.
Insurance, it turns out, does cover the rental car.
So my husband's car got hit today, or not today, yesterday.
Is he mad?
Mad? No, I don't think so. Frustrated, anxious, maybe.
What the Murrays are going through isn't fun for anybody. But it's even harder when you feel like you're just getting by, because any small thing, any unexpected bump in the road can snowball. The candidates this year have been saying the words middle class a whole lot.
What's good for middle class families also happens to be good economics.
The middle class has been forgotten in our country.
But maybe there's not so much talking about the middle class, about people like Aaron and Mary Murray, as they are talking at them. Because the fact is, the middle class in this country has changed. For one thing, it's gotten smaller. Back in 1971, 70% of Americans were in the middle class. Right now, it's about half. So there's the absolute number. But more than that, what it means to be middle class in this country is changing too. If you go just by the numbers, families that make between $48,000 and $145,000 a year are in the middle class. That's according to the Pew Research Center. The Murrays are smack in the middle of that range. Between them, they make $90,000 a year. And yes, I can hear you already. $90,000 a year, Kai, that's good money. Yes, it is. But listen to this. We met Mary and Aaron back in December at a coffee shop in downtown Los Angeles working on a story about how people thought they'd be affected by the Federal Reserve's first interest rate hike in 6 years, if you remember back then. And when we stopped by the Murray's table, Aaron said this to us.
I live close to the poverty line, so most of the things like purchasing, making a large purchase, are already out of my grasp. So making it another step unattainable isn't really going to dramatically alter my life.
Does it depress you at all?
No, because I'm not a depressed person.
So how is it that two fully employed teachers in their mid-30s raising a five-year-old daughter can feel like they're right above the poverty line? Well, as we started work on this series, we went to see the Murrays on a day that just happened to start with Aaron's car getting totaled. And after the tow truck left, we sat down to talk.
Do you guys feel like you're middle class?
It feels weird to say that I am middle class. I don't
feel middle class, but I think maybe I have a perception of what that is in my brain. That's different than the reality of it.
What's your perception then?
Not having to worry about putting gas in the car. Not having to say, oh, let's wait till Thursday to pay this because that's the day you get paid.
Extra guacamole. I can get extra guacamole. That's all I want in my life. I want to get extra guacamole.
But I got news for you. You guys are middle class.
I know.
Yeah, almost by definition.
Which is insane to me. I'd like to feel middle class, but I don't.
They both grew up in Michigan. Didn't start dating till they'd each moved out to L.A. And when they got married back in 2009, they made a five-year plan.
We were going to have, in my best remember, we used to have it written down on the refrigerator, actually.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. In my best remembrance, we actually had planned on living in a house at this point.
House, your student loans would be done. I would be done with my master's program and in a teaching job for LAUSD.
All right, so run me through that. How'd we do?
No loans are paid off.
Yep.
We do not have a house.
Yeah,
no.
Aaron does have a teaching job. It's not with LAUSD, but...
But it is a teaching job, and I did finish my master's
program. He did finish
program.
His master's, yeah.
So, one out of three.
Yeah, not too bad. And I think also, actually, hilariously enough, on that schedule was that we also, you know, we wanted to have a kid by then.
Yep. Yeah.
We ended up with the kid...
You did.
Right away.
There you go.
So we got that one.
No wasting time.
Yeah.
No wasting time on that.
How'd you wind up out here instead of Michigan?
Well, the first time or right now?
Well,
so when our daughter...
Mary and Aaron moved back to Michigan when Vandy was a baby, hoping that the lower cost of living there would mean they could finally get ahead. Things didn't quite work out that way.
We had a rental house with a yard in Michigan, but we were both working three jobs.
And making a lot less still.
And making a lot less. So even though the cost of housing was half, we didn't have any opportunity to enjoy the housing because we were constantly working. When one of us wouldn't be working, the other one would be.
The Murray's apartment in Los Angeles does have some charm to it, but it's tiny and it costs twice as much as their house in Michigan did.
Absolutely.
And you're in a, what I understand is a converted two-bedroom, right?
Yeah, it's a one-bedroom converted into two.
Yeah.
Yep. It includes all of our utilities, though, so that's really nice.
Yeah.
I don't want to feel like I'm a person who is poor. So I do make choices to do things like, I live here in this apartment. Could I find an apartment somewhere that's even farther away that is less? Yeah, but I want to live here with the opportunities it affords me.
They put the move back to LA on their credit cards, bills they are still paying off, by the way. So now, with basically no savings, the Murrays say their five-year plan is looking more like 15.
I have kind of given up that house idea, honestly.
Yeah.
If your insurance wasn't going to cover this car and you guys needed to spend, I don't know, $1,000 to rent a car for a month, I'm making this number up. Do you have it?
No.
No.
Nope. Not if we're going to pay our rent on time.
Are there months you choose not to pay bills?
There have been well, months where we've chosen not to pay his student loan or my student loan. You know, I never skip the rent, I never skip the car payment, I never skip the insurance.
Right.
The ones that are not gonna come, you know, back and bite me.
Like, and we've had to do it where we've said, we have $50 to make it the rest of the month, so we have to make that the rest of the month.
So and we do it.
I wonder if you feel forgotten at all. As you look at the headline numbers in this economy, where the, you know, jobs are growing and the economy's growing, and yet here you are making $90,000 a year living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We're trying to get by the best we can. Like, I don't know how else to put it. It's insane that that's not enough, that that amount of money makes us go paycheck to paycheck. And we looked at our budget and we went through and itemized everything and said, okay, let's put this money here and this money here. And it's not like we're spending money left and right crazy. You know, things are expensive. We have bills to pay.
The couple's one splurge is a gymnastics class for their daughter, Vandy, something she loves and apparently something she's good at. Thing is, that eats up a good chunk of their disposable income, so they find themselves saying no when she asks for ice cream or a new toy.
We've had to have a lot of those conversations with her, and I think that's one of the things that's hardest for me personally.
Yeah, because I don't want to tell her. I mean, I know that
she's aware of the fact that we don't do stuff because we don't have the money to do it. But, I mean, she'll say, at some time, she says, I wish that we had more money so we could do this.
It's got to kill you.
It does. It really does. But, you know, we talk to her about how lucky she is that we do have what we have.
I wonder how you're looking at this election. Are you, first of all?
Yes, yes.
And what are you thinking about?
I pay very close attention.
Do you think your fortunes are going to change based on this election?
I don't. No, I feel like I'm really... disenchanted, disenfranchised. I'm nervous. I don't think that anything's going to change. I think that there's a lot of not understanding situations like us. I think that a lot of people say, you know, oh, well, you should take better care of your finances and you should budget for this and you should do that. We're trying.
This idea of the American dream... I guess that's the answer to the question.
Well, somebody woke me up before I could have mine. So that's what happened to me.
There's a characteristic, I guess you'd call it, of the struggling middle class that doesn't get talked about a whole lot. Certainly not by the politicians. And it really doesn't show up in the statistics either. That thing where you just have to put your head down and keep on going. I asked Aaron about that as we stood on that sidewalk that day watching his car get towed away.
Do you ever just stop and say, are you kidding me, man?
Yeah, I do. I don't know. This morning, my wife was holding it together. She was so super calm. And then we just had a moment later today where she was just kind of cracking in the car. And then when we got home, I feel like kind of letting it all go. Like just saying, but that doesn't do anything, you know? Like I got to move on. I got to think about the next thing. How do I solve this? How do I move forward? How do I make it work? You know? And that's the thing, is irregardless, I have to make something work.
So here's the question. The Murrays are a pretty good example of the middle class today, working, making decent income, but still not able to really make it or feel like they're making it. But why? And why is that important? After a quick break, an economist who studies exactly that. You can see the Murrays, by the way, get a sense of how they get by on tomorrow night's edition of the NewsHour, me doing TV. We've got more about their story as well at marketplace.org. Coming up,
problems that these technologies make are going to only be solved by more and better technology.
Come on, say it with me. I, for one, embrace my new robot overlords. But first, let's do the numbers. Au revoir, 18,000. The Dow Industrials off 19 points today, a 10th percent, 17,985. The NASDAQ threw off 16 points, about a 3rd percent. Finished at 49.58. The S&P 500 took off 3 points, about a 10th percent, 21.15. Their financial firms were not feeling it. JPMorgan Chase unloaded 0.75%. Goldman Sachs gave back 0.9%. Today marks the 41st anniversary of the founding of the U.S. Army Defense Contractors. We salute you. Northrop Grumman climbed 0.4%. Raytheon lit up 0.3%. Lockheed Martin tipped up about 0.1% today. Bond prices rose. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note, I'm telling you, watch the bond market, down to 1.67%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The Murrays are just one family, right? But they give us a pretty good window into a middle class in this country that isn't just shrinking. It's changing in ways that we are all going to notice. I sat down not too long ago with Jennifer Pate. She's a professor of economics at Loyola Marymount University. And I started with the big picture question. Why the relatively good news in the headline numbers don't match what most people, like, say, the Murrays, are feeling on the ground.
On a national level, we are doing really well, right? We continue to grow, not as fast as we would like to, but that's always
right.
True.
Right.
We're still growing in terms of GDP per capita, which is great, so we're still keeping up with population growth. Our unemployment rate is low. Everything looks really great. But if that wealth isn't being shared among people outside of the top, it doesn't feel like we're wealthy unless you're in the top. Wealth is being generated, it's just not being distributed.
This economy has changed, as we've talked about, in the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's never going back, right? Manufacturing jobs aren't coming back in size and number. We're not going to onshore enough to get back to 1975's economy. I mean, is that going to happen?
Yeah, but we don't need manufacturing jobs to save the middle class, right? Our unemployment rate is incredibly low. So we have people in jobs. We don't need to be creating jobs for people necessarily. I mean, I would never say we shouldn't create jobs.
Right.
We should, because jobs on a regular basis are created and destroyed. It's kind of like the circle of life in the economy. But we don't need manufacturing to do it. We just need employees to be supported in the jobs that they're in. We have very low minimum wages. We have seen the fall, the demise of most unions, right? And so people don't have collective bargaining power that they used to have. We've basically relied on companies to be the ones who determine how much income people make in this country, and then that becomes a question of, well, every dollar I pay to my employee is a dollar I don't make in profit. Right. And then that trade-off, I think, makes it very hard for companies to sit down and say, well, this is the right thing, so that's why we should pay people more.
It's not new, though, this idea that the middle class in this economy is disappearing and getting hollowed out. I mean, we've been hearing about it for years.
Right.
Why is it such a thing now, today, in this election cycle?
I think people have gotten to sort of feeling like enough is enough. I mean, wages have been stagnant in real terms since roughly the mid-70s. I mean, so we've gone through decades of this. I think maybe in the beginning we didn't really notice it so much. Not everybody is looking at inflation figures and saying, well, am I better or worse off? In nominal wages, people feel like their salaries are increasing, right? And they do.
In the actual dollar amount.
And the dollar amounts, right? So I get a little raise every year. Oh, I'm so excited about that. That's great. I get a raise. I feel good about it, but I'm not thinking, well, what else has gone up in terms of expenses, right, and prices? In the meanwhile, that means that I'm actually earning less than I was last year. So I think this compounds. In the beginning, people kind of didn't really, I think, notice it so much, and now the difference in inequality is growing at such a rapid rate that I think people are finally saying, I'm done with it. This seems unfair.
So you weren't surprised to see Bernie Sanders catch on and to see Donald Trump catch on?
No. globally, right, in terms of our prosperity, in terms of our economic wealth overall, we have incredibly high income inequality relative to our peers who are other high-income countries. So it's shocking that people aren't more upset, that they haven't been more upset. This has been, imagine, you know, nice, dry kindling just waiting for a good spark.
This idea of the American dream, should we just stop talking about that?
No, I know. We're founded on the American dream, and yet we're kind of crashing it, right? If we give up on the American dream, that basically means that we're giving up on the average family, right? And we can't give up on our middle-class families. We can't give up on the American dream as much as we could decide that we're just going to throw out the Constitution, right? It's part of who we are.
Jennifer Pate, she is a professor of economics at Loyola Marymount University. You want to know if you're in the middle class? We did a quick video with Frontline that breaks down what it means to be middle class today and why it matters that the middle class is shrinking. It's on our Facebook page. Marketplace Business News is what you're going to want to search for. And at our website, you can see just how much more expensive middle class life has gotten in this country in the past 20 or so years. It is all at marketplace.org. How about something not strictly economy to close things out? How about that? How about a peek into our shared technological future, courtesy of a guy whose track record is pretty good in that department? Kevin Kelly was a founding editor of Wired magazine. He's been writing about technology for, well, we're just going to say a good long while now. And he's got a new book out about the way technology is changing and how it might change us. It's called The Inevitable. Kevin, it's good to have you back on the program.
It's great to be back.
I want to start actually in the beginning of this book, and you as a kid with that first Apple II computer you had, and you weren't that impressed, but then something happened.
I plugged it into the telephone,
yeah,
and it transformed from a better typewriter into a magical continent where the technology was more human-like, more organic than what I thought it was before.
And it gets us, and I'm going to fast forward a lot here, it gets us to this book. It's called The Inevitable. Give me the, well, I want to say one sentence, but give me like the short paragraph thesis here.
There's a whole bunch of things that are coming. Some of them look kind of scary right now. AI, robots, total tracking, virtual reality in your bedroom. But I think we should actually embrace all this stuff because only by engaging it can we actually steer it.
One of the biggies you talk about is AI, artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
It's coming, first of all. There's no doubt about that. Arguably, it's here, right?
It already is. When you fly an airplane, the human pilot is only flying for 7 to 8 minutes. The rest of the time, the AI is driving.
You relate a conversation with Larry Page, one of the founders of Google.
Right. Before they had a good business model, and I said, hey, search. What's the point of search? Yeah. There's Alta Vista.
All right. You're dating yourself here, Kevin.
And he said, hey, we're making an AI. So way back from the beginning, Google's making an AI. My prediction would be in 2025, the major revenue of Google will be selling AI.
There's a very large privacy thread that runs through this book. In fact, one of the chapters is tracking. Basically, we got to get over it.
Yeah. So analogy I like to use is a lot of people are familiar with the kind of a battle we had maybe last decade about copying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my version is that the internet is like the world's largest copy machine. And if anything that can possibly be copied touches it, it'll be copied indiscriminately like a superconductive liquid. The same thing is happening now with tracking. The internet is the world's largest tracking machine. And anything that can be tracked will be tracked. So the only way to deal with it is to embrace the tracking and say, how do we civilize it? How do we tame it? How do we domesticate it? How do we make that something that we're comfortable in? Because we're not going to be able to stop this increase in tracking.
And right about here, everybody who's listening to this radio interview says, Kai, you got to ask him how we're going to do all that stuff.
Right.
So how are we going to do all that stuff?
So while I think the tracking is inevitable, I think we do it by something I called covalence. The reason why we're uncomfortable right now, they're tracking us. I don't know what they're tracking. I have no control over it. They're not accountable, and I get no benefit. That doesn't feel right. But if I know who's looking at me, who's watching me, who's tracking me, I have some access to it. I can correct it. I can hold them accountable, and I get some benefit, that begins to feel a little bit more comfortable.
There's a quote that, honestly, made me stop and read it a couple of times. We are morphing so fast that our ability to invent new things outpaces the rate at which we can civilize them. That in and of itself, the idea that technology is outpacing our ability to handle it, will strike some people as a very big whoa, wait a minute moment.
It is. And it's the challenge we have. And I think the place that might differ from, say, critics who really want to turn the clock back. So I'm saying that the problems that these technologies make are going to only be solved by more and better technology.
We had you on 6 years ago for your most recent book. And at the time, I went back and I listened to it again this morning. You told me you didn't have a smartphone and you didn't have a laptop. So here we are, 2016, Kevin Kelly, technological guru of the ages. Do we now finally have a smartphone and a laptop?
We do. I bought my first smartphone, the iPhone 6.
Wow. You held out for a while.
Exactly.
Now, are you glued to it?
And no.
You're not?
No. I use it to look at my email when I'm traveling.
It's an expensive email thing, Kevin. I mean, you know that, right? You can get cheaper versions.
Can you?
What? The most recent book by Kevin Kelly, who you know from Wired and a bunch of other stuff, is called The Inevitable. Kevin, thanks very much.
It's really my pleasure.
This final note on the way out today, returning whence we came, the solemn constitutional obligation we are all embarked upon, choosing the next president of these United States. Donald Trump saw President Obama's Hillary Clinton endorsement video this morning, and he tweeted this, quote, "Obama just endorsed crooked Hillary. He wants 4 more years of Obama, but nobody else does!" Exclamation point there, in case you didn't hear it on the radio, to which Hillary Clinton tweeted back, "Delete your account," which honestly was pretty funny. And then Reince Priebus, the head of the RNC, tweeted, "If anybody knows how to use a delete key, it's you." And then Donald Trump tweeted back, "Never mind. You know where I'm going." What are they, like 10 years old? All right, there you go. That is all we got today. The Dow off 19 points, about a 10th percent. The NASDAQ down 16 points, a 3rd percent. The S&P 500 down 3 points, a 10th percent. John Buckley, Deirdre Depke, Eve Epstein, George Judson, Suzanne Levy, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. Our managing editor is Mark Miller. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.